This podcast has been brought to you by Panacea Healthcare Services, a trusted solution for your billing and collection needs.
Welcome to BH Billing Advocates. This is a podcast where we talk about everything that supports behavioral healthcare billing efforts. We'll be talking about billing and collections, utilization review, credentialing, clinical documentation, and everything that supports the revenue growth for substance abuse and mental health treatment providers nationwide.
All right, I think some introductions are in order. I'm Gian DaCosta. I'm the Director of Operations here at Panacea Healthcare Services.
And I'm James Gordon, Managing Partner for Panacea Healthcare Services.
Okay, current events. Before we get into our main topic, we always want to be able to talk about something that's going on within the healthcare industry of interest. Currently, we have an article that definitely piqued our interest, and I think throughout the industry and throughout the nation as well. Purdue Pharma reaches a $270 million settlement with Oklahoma in the first opioid crisis case. This case is concerned the Sackler family. As you guys know, the inventors of OxyContin and other drugs that have really caused a serious opioid issue throughout the nation is finally being held accountable. $270 million to settle claims by the Oklahoma Attorney General throughout the issues they faced throughout that particular state. Gian, what is your thoughts about not only this particular case that's come about, but just in general, the opioid crisis that has existed and the Sackler family and the accountability that they're finally facing?
Yeah, so honestly, when I saw this article, I cheered a little bit. I was very excited and, let me say, happy to see that finally there's some traction being made, because I will say, people always wonder, why is it that physicians and doctor's offices, they push sometimes to go to these opioid and opiate drugs, and you're creating drug addicts in a sense. It's not controlled well enough. And I feel like it all comes back to the developers and the creators of these drugs, because I feel like they're trying to increase their sales. So they're doing things to ensure that their sales are going. These patients who are addicted, they want them to keep buying. So I'm very happy to see that there is some accountability being held, that you're trying to really show to all pharmaceutical companies, and I feel like it can branch out even past the substance abuse world, that these pharmaceutical companies need to start doing right by the regular American to really actually push for wellness and not to try to hold someone down through boosting their profits and staying on those addictive substances.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. As a matter of fact, the whole lawsuit actually stemmed from their aggressive marketing tactics. You know, encouraging individuals to actually utilize these drugs, even though they know most likely what the outcome would be, and that's widespread addiction. So yeah, I am definitely happy that accountability is being seen, not only in this case, but I think as time goes on, we're going to see other cases throughout other states that are definitely being aggressive in holding the Sackler family and other organizations that develop addictive-related drugs accountable.
Yeah, and even though we're not clinicians, just one thing I always like to think about, like, say, when I go to the doctor, is that when they're trying to prescribe me something, I always try to ask, like, what is their strength? Are there other options? Is there something lower grade that I can take? Because I'm just very cautious, especially working in this industry, that I don't want to become addicted to a substance, or maybe it's something that could be less harmful to my body for my liver to process and things like that. So I think that this can really be hopefully a good push for people to start looking at what they're taking, for physicians to look at what they're prescribing, and patients to look at what they're asking for sometimes when they go to the doctor's office.
Totally agree. As I'm taking a look at the article a little bit further, the aggressive nature to try to hold the Sackler family and its related companies accountable is definitely at high. Oklahoma is actually one of 37 states to bring a suit against Purdue Pharma, and is actually one of 1,600 opioid lawsuits that the Sackler family is facing currently. So I think beyond bankruptcy options and other options, I think the Sackler family is definitely finally facing some pressure.
The sad part is I think they can afford it. That's how much money they've made over the years.
You do have an unfortunate point there. Well, let's hope change continues to happen throughout the industry and continues to bring relief through the addiction crisis that we face throughout our nation today.
All right, guys, go ahead and get your dipping sauce ready. On this episode, we're going to be dropping a fresh nugget on the current trend in the industry of going in-network.
Okay, guys, as my partner in claim says, get your dipping sauce ready. We have another interesting topic for you today, and I will say it is a subject matter that we are bombarded with constantly, especially where we're anywhere on the West Coast working with providers. I would say if I'm speaking to 10 different behavioral healthcare providers residing in California, Arizona, or anywhere else throughout the United States that has in-network relationship issues and out-of-network payment to member issues, there is a plethora of providers that would want to know how can I go in-network and what does that process look like going in-network with various insurance carriers. It's definitely an important subject matter in today's behavioral healthcare climate for several different reasons. I think from patient generation reasons and also revenue generation reasons and several others, it becomes something of a very much interest to want to actually go and network with either some major carriers or actually all of them. My partner in claim, should I say, Gian DaCosta, I want you to chime in a little bit on, you know, why is going and network seeming to be the hot topic for today, and what does that process look like?
All right, guys. So James kind of touched on a few of them, but I'll go a little more in depth there. I would say the main reasons, one, are for states in which Blue Cross Blue Shield, as some of you may know as out-of-network providers, they pay to the member. So if you did not know, if you were to go in-network, they would actually pay to you. Some providers feel that the payment to out-of-network right now, even though it's going to the member, it's still substantial, and in some cases they're able to receive that money. But there are definitely cases where they don't. You know, as I have worked with so many different providers, that's always an issue. They have so much difficulty tracking down these patients. Some of them will always say they didn't receive the funds. Different things like that happen, and for the most part, I see that as a huge issue in the industry when you have a substance abuse patient receiving large sums of money. So that will go ahead and take care and alleviate that issue because then the provider will always receive their funds. And then on a secondary note, then you are going to open yourself up into a situation where, say, with Blue Cross Blue Shield, where more than 50% of the country is normally covered by Blue Cross. That tends to be 50% of any facility's population, at least. You open yourself up to an even higher volume because there is no Blue Cross plan that you can't take if you're in network. You shouldn't have that problem. And then your funds are always coming to you. It's set at a set rate, so you know what you're getting because you agreed to it. Or sometimes they do have a fee schedule, but at least you're aware of the funds that you'll be receiving. Sometimes taking a lesser amount for that volume and that guarantee that the money is coming to you is worth it. So it's just something that should always be considered. And then I kind of touched on it, that's across the board with all insurances for the volume portion, because you are now able to take any one of their patients. So Cigna, you don't have to be concerned, is it an HMO, is it a PPO, is it open access? No, I'm in network. Any patient come and see me.
Awesome.
So
awesome.
those are just two very key factors to really think about when you're thinking about going in network. Also, it really opens you up to a new avenue of patients because there's some insurances like TRICARE. If you wanted to do government, Medicaid, Medicare, there's no such thing as out-of-network. You have to become a registered provider and in their network. So that's also something to think about. That's a whole caveat of patients that you've never been able to touch. And so about what the process looks like. So our process as far as helping providers go in network would be we make the initial reach out. We reach out to the carrier. We assess the situation. We find out if the panel is open. If it is open, we obtain the documents that you'll need to fill out in order to go in network. We always request that the facility fills out the documents. And we always get that question as to why. And the reason for that is the documents tend to have a lot of information that's very specific to the facility. So the only way we would be able to fill out some of that information is to sit on the phone with one of your representatives, go through each question to fill it in. And for sometimes they have to go do research. So it just makes more sense, as some of it's very personal and specific to the facility, that they fill out the documents. From there, we'll take those completed documents, submit it to the insurance. We go ahead, do all the follow-ups. We speak with them about it if they have questions. If something's missing, we let you know so you can obtain it. And then from there, at that point, some insurances, if it's not at a set fee schedule, allow for rate negotiation. And that's the most important part. And that's where we play a really important part as well. Because we have so many different providers and we service so many different providers with different insurances and the same insurances, we're able to take averages for services and use data to prove that, hey, you know, you tend to pay at this level for out-of-network. I understand you might want to come a little under it, but, you know, we have more data to back it up. So we're sometimes able to negotiate a higher rate for that service. And then at that point, if both parties are happy with the contract, the negotiated rate, the contest of the contract, because some contracts will make things inclusive. I've seen contracts that will make urine drug testing inclusive to your services. It really depends. Every contract can be different depending on the insurances. Some will include meals, some will include transportation, different things like that can be included. But as long as both parties are happy with the terms that are within that contract and the rate that's within the contract, you would both sign that contract, and then from there, you're in-network. You'll have an effective date, and from that point on, you're able to take those in-network clients and really maximize your potential as a facility.
Wow. Awesome. And great, great piece of information you're providing there, Gian. Thank you for the audience out there. Let me ask, let's be transparent here. What are, if there are any cons for a provider going in-network? What are any negative aspects of someone going to network?
The only thing I can say that would be negative is when people go in network and they didn't have any foreknowledge and you didn't ensure that you can afford the rate that you agreed to. Because I've seen situations where people accept a contract or there's an addendum to the contract and maybe they didn't review the addendum to the contract and now the rate has changed on them and they didn't know. And so they're in a situation where they're trying to cancel or they have to wait until the term's over and they're losing money because they didn't project that rate that they're going to receive to ensure they're going to be able to still thrive. Because going in network, sure, you may be able to take more patients, but will it matter if you cannot thrive on it? You still need to be able to still turn a profit. So I've definitely seen where people don't take note of their negotiated rate or what's set on the fee schedule. They'll just say, oh, it's on a fee schedule. I should be good, right? No, even if you accept it and it's a new insurance that only does in network and you're testing it out, view it as a tester. Maybe that's not an insurance that you can take because you can't pay your staff on that insurance. You can't continue to save lives.
Got you. Totally understood. So it seems that throughout this whole process, am I wrong? And is the listeners correct in saying that the negotiation of the pricing and the rates is going to be the most crucial part of this function?
I would definitely say so. You want to at least be able to review that fee schedule, hear that number to make sure that it is going to work for you and your program. And then one other thing I want to highlight for you is the length of time that it takes. I know some people think that it's something that's very quick. It can be a 6 to 8 month process. I've even seen it take up to a year. If you submit everything that they request in the beginning, I would say you're going to fall more in the 6 month range. But a lot of times providers tend to forget one document or their insurance companies for the malpractice insurance. The insurance company will leave something very crucial off of your policy that they give you for proof of policy. Sometimes I'll see an address, one of their location addresses is missing. Now they have to send it back to request the address to be put on it. Things like that can happen. So it is a bit of a lengthy process. So you also just need to be patient and work through that process because the insurance, they have so many different applications and they still have to review all of your documents while making their decision because they take so much into an account when they're considering you.
Now, let me ask, Gian, you mentioned it could take up to 6 months for a provider to be able to fully go in network with an insurance carrier. I did get posed a question the other day. What happens if the provider was previously in network, have in network rates, it's just now the expiration of those rates required and they have to renegotiate them? With that occurring, is it still going to take that maximized 6 month time, or does the time go shorter because they're already in network with the carrier?
So normally how that works is, you know, your contract is coming up to an end, and if they're going to lower your rate, you should have received some kind of letter, some kind of notification, and it's normally a couple months before that they're advising you that the rate is going to change. And normally when you're going to renew and there's a change like that, you're required to sign something. So if you're not happy with the new rate, don't sign it. do not sign it. You might need to consider going back to an out-of-network status if they're putting you to too low of a rate. I know that there are definitely conversations where sometimes you have to prove why the rate cannot change. Maybe you have to really reveal some staffing information, salaries, things like that to really prove that I can't run a business off what you're offering me. Or maybe you might need to consider changing your model to things that are a little higher paying on your contract. Maybe do more residential or more detoxes, depending on your level of care that you offer.
Okay. And last question I know I got posed not too long ago is, hey, at the end of the day, if I had to choose one carrier to go and network with right now, which one of those carriers would be out of all the major ones, in your opinion?
Blue Cross. Because Blue Cross, again, is the highest population. And as well, a lot of states, they pay to patient. So those pay to patient states, that's automatic money that you were not receiving before that you'll now consistently receive. And then across the country in general, you're able to take more patients. And then at least you have a guaranteed set amount that you're going to be receiving.
Well, there you have it. The process of going in network. It is a tedious process, but is a process that can be very beneficial to a healthcare provider as they're continuing to save lives. We hope that if you're going in network, you understand the process. You're working with a correct third party facilitator of that process. But of course, if you need any assistance, Panacea Healthcare Services, we're here to help. Okay, guys. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of BH Billing Advocates. Really appreciate your time. If you have any questions on the information that was covered today, please do not be shy. There is no dumb questions at all. You can reach us at info@bhbillingadvocates.com. Plus, please note, if you have any other additional questions on topics that actually went beyond what we spoke about today, those particular questions could end up evolving to becoming a subject matter on one of our future episodes. So please, let us know what you're thinking as it pertains to the business side of behavioral healthcare. We're looking forward to help you.
And remember, no matter what the problem, we are always ready to snap a cape on.
Dun, 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 dun. BH Billing Advocates.